to Christ the Center, your weekly conversation of Reformed theology. This is episode number 951. My name is Camden Busey. I'm in Libertyville, Illinois. And I'm back on the program on the heels of a trip to Greenville, South Carolina. We just got back from the Greenville Presbyterian Theological Seminary Conference. And I'm here for a couple days recording a podcast with some good friends. And then we'll be heading to Charlotte to visit, pop in on the Coram Deo Conference, and then to a Reform Forum seminar. As this episode comes out, Lord willing, we'll be hosting a seminar on Friday night. So that'll be the 20th, March 20th, at Shiloh OPC in Raleigh, North Carolina, and then a seminar on Saturday morning, March 21st. So stay tuned for that. If you're in the area and can get there, I'm sure there'll be space, and we'd love to have you. But let me introduce to you our panel today. I'm really excited. I've been looking forward to this. We have with us first, I'll introduce Matt Adams, who serves as pastor of First Presbyterian Church in Dillon, South Carolina. Welcome, Matt. So good to see you today.
Glad to be here, Camden. Good to see you again.
Yeah.
Even though I feel like I just saw you,
you did.
3 days ago.
It's true.
But I did.
We had a good time at the conference. It was good to get some meals together and spend some time together. I'm glad to have you on the program. And we also have with us a brother, Ben Ratliff, who serves as associate pastor of Covenant Presbyterian Church in Cleveland, Mississippi. He's also co-host of the Polities Matter podcast. You guys may subscribe or may know them, a program that he co-hosts with our friends Scott Edberg and Jared Nelson. Welcome, Ben. It's great to see you today.
Thanks, Cameron. Glad to be with you guys.
Yeah, real excited. We're glad to connect. Today, we're going to be speaking about Presbyterianism. I want to pose the question, what is Presbyterian? What is a Presbyterian? And why does Presbyterian government matter? The reason for that is it's always a good topic. It's always important to speak about these things. We have strong views on this, which are downstream of our convictions about what the Bible teaches. But also, what's on the occasion of Matt having recently published an article online on his Substack. It got picked up by the Aquila Report, and it popped up in my newsfeed one morning, an article titled, Grassroots Presbyterianism Does Not Equal Congregationalism. So we're going to start with that and then broaden into a larger discussion of Presbyterian identity, perhaps talking about in broad strokes, its theology, history, church government, maybe even some practical matters. And it's timely too, because the church is always struggling with various issues and authorities, structures and controversies and discipline. All of these things are bound up with how the church ought to be run. And we're going to be speaking about that today. So I'm going to ask you, Matt, let's start it up. Let's fire it up and get right at it. But yeah. Matt, your article pushes back on the idea that grassroots Presbyterianism is basically a kind of functional congregationalism. Now, them's fighting words, aren't they?
What misunderstanding to start out the gate.
Yeah. What misunderstanding are you trying to correct? Just speak to us, if you would, about the occasion of your article.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that people don't usually know about me, if they're familiar with me at all, is that I actually grew up in a Pentecostal context. And so while Pentecostalism, of course, flows from Methodism, which is very Episcopalian in church government, bishops and things like that, functionally, the congregation was autonomous. In fact, even worse than that, maybe, is that the pastor was essentially the CEO of the church, and he mm-hmm. alone made the decisions administratively, executively, worship, everything that happened within the life of the church. He might have some men that he consults with, but they are advisory members at best. And so when I started attending a Presbyterian church, I was infatuated with this idea of church government, this idea of elder-led with plurality and parity, this idea of gathered courts, both presbytery and then general assemblies, was really intriguing to me. And so one of the trends that I've seen, especially within traditions that consider themselves like the PCA, where Ben and I are ordained, as grassroots Presbyterian, mm-hmm. Meaning that you know, actions move from the session, the local church, upward, that has taken a form of functional congregationalism because when doctrine or practice has been at odds with one another, maybe that's the best way of saying it, we have referred to our grassroots nature, right? So, I mean, many of y'all's listeners will know that we have been dealing with commissioned deacons who mm-hmm. are female. Well, our polity does not allow females to be ordained. And so those local congregations have been making decisions to commission them, and they function as deacons. They're called deacons, and or at least the feminine version of it, deaconess. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the whole reason in which they say this is allowable, you know, with our polity, because of our polity, is because of our grassroots nature. And so that was really some of the pushback, and that's in my Substack article alongside of intinction as a form of valid Lord's Supper methodologies. Mm-hmm. And so really I was trying to get to that, yes, Christ governs his church through elders in a local congregation, but he also governs his church through gathered courts for the good of the whole body and the unity of the denomination that the confession and the standards and the Constitution represent. So that was kind of the beginning works of why I wrote that.
Ben, have you noticed similar things in your own goings on and in the with your podcast subjects and just your local context? Are there similar challenges elsewhere in the PCA and the Reformed community?
Yeah, Matt's article resonates with me. I recognize it. You know, we see it. I hadn't thought through what you had written here, Matt, about those particular issues. You know, the Lord's Supper and the officer stuff. But it makes a lot of sense there. I've always joked that the most congregational part of the PCA is the way we call ministers, which is mm-hmm. often, you know, very much just the way an ordinary Baptist church would go call a minister. But it turns out we have more congregational aspects of the way we operate, I guess, now that you've written these down.
One of the things about grassroots Presbyterianism is that, of course, it values the voice of the congregation. Mm-hmm. And yet, at the very same time, it does not locate the church's authority in the congregation, but in the elders. And I think that's one of the things that has been misconstrued in our understanding of grassroots as it's kind of taken this form of functional congregationalism within the local church.
Yeah, there's some fine points we can put on this. I agree. We might even say to even tighten that up a little bit also that Christ gives his authority to the church, and that authority is exercised through those right. that mm-hmm. have particular office and giftedness by the Lord's provision to do those things. So the officers exercise the authority. It's not like, and no one was saying this, but it's not like the officers have it because it's theirs by right, or they're like different types of humans than others or something like that.
Yeah. The super apostles, the second Corinthians.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's the same thing. Or Roman Catholic, you have the sacrament of holy orders, which depending mm-hmm. on your understanding and interpretation of that might enable you to be kind of a different type of being who has the ability to administer the mass and stuff like that. And you wouldn't be able to without it. It's not an official thing so much as it might even be metaphysical. So we're not speaking that way, but I'm wondering big picture, you know, as your article is written and as we've been seeing these challenges of late, why do you think there is this confusion? Why is it so common right now? Do you think there's anything, do you think it's always been this way? Or do you think there's something unique in the church situation over the last 5-10 years that makes it more fertile ground for this type of thinking within Presbyterian churches?
No, I definitely think that grassroots Presbyterian as a whole has often lent itself to thinking that there is more authority mm-hmm. Within the congregation rather than the elders leading the congregation. You know, the elders, as we've been talking just now, fine-tuning some of the things that have already been said, the congregation has elected these elders to be their leaders and representatives before the Lord. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's been a whole host of, you know, really illustrations that I could point back to with simply doing things like the congregation approving budgets in the PCA. That's not necessary. That, you know, the deacons are preparing the budgets, the elders are approving the budget, but for some reason we have to have the congregation approve it as well. But also, I mean, so long story short, let me simplify this. I do think that throughout the history of the PCA in particular, we have had situations where these things very pragmatically they've been misunderstood. And that's, it's taken a new form, I think, right now, with the functional female officers, that we're dealing with. But I think that there's been situations throughout our whole history since 1973 where these things have pragmatically been a problem.
Yeah. It's interesting to think about the different, especially within NAPARC, the North American Presbyterian and Reformed Council. It's a ecumenical group of churches. I'm an OPC minister. Most people that listen to this will know that. And we have the closest, tightest fellowship as possible with the PCA. We have a joint venture together. We publish, mm-hmm. we have published hymnals. We have published a Sunday school curriculum, all that sort of stuff together. Freely transfer members, ministerial credentials with very minimal exams. I mean, all of this kind of stuff. We functionally, largely, not the same church, but really closely related. And we've tried to join mm-hmm. a couple times and it hasn't worked out. But it goes both ways. It goes both ways. We said no in 86, but you said no to us two other times, but that's all right. We won't get into that. That's water under the bridge. But
we'll see what we can do.
It's different. They're different also just cultural matters. And then I have dear brothers and friends in the United Reformed Churches in North America, the continental side, the Reformed side, capital R Reformed, as a cousin to Presbyterian. We're both, you know, descendants of the Protestant Reformation, but those have developed slightly differently and geographically and nationally. They often will tend also quite a bit more towards a congregational bent. I don't mean to say they're congregational. They're connected. So they not only have a plurality of elders and a parity of elders, but also a connectedness. And that at root, I think, is the triad that really kind of forms the heart of a Reformed ecclesiology. But there's a greater emphasis and an elevation of the local church, perhaps in distinction from the regional church. And some URC guys, if I'm not mistaken, they would not even like to use the term regional church. I mean, they'll not only speak of classes, but they would say that this, you know, isn't a church proper. It's a gathering of local sessions. And same for the denomination. They would prefer, many of them would prefer the term federation as opposed to denomination. It wouldn't, some hardcore people would not even want to speak of the URC as a church. That's why the emphasis is on the United Reformed Churches in North America, because it's a federation of local churches. It's a different perspective. It's not contrary or conflicting with the rest of NAPARC, and other NAPARC churches no doubt would agree, but it's a different emphasis. So where I'm going with this is there are also some cultural expressions of this. For the URC, a lot of it, I suspect, has to do with the abuses of power in the CRC, where they came from. And that was heavily bureaucratic at times and top down. And what happens when that is abused and you break off from it, you might want to put the emphasis on the many rather than the one to counteract the abuses. But this time of year, we're starting to see General Assembly dockets start to form. And it's that season where you've got the ticker. How many overtures are there going to be for the PCA General Assembly? And I think you guys are up over 60, aren't you?
Yeah, I think it's 66. Correct me if I'm wrong, Ben, at this point.
No, you're more current than me.
We have more overtures for one General Assembly than the OPC has had in its entire
existence. Yeah, we might have one or two. Now, it's not to say we don't have things to discuss or issues. My point in bringing that up is, and certainly not to make light of it at all, but there is this extra kind of cultural approach. There's a different culture in the PCA, and part of it has to do with your founding and how you began and how you've operated, where this is a way that the lower courts communicate to the upper courts right. in some ways. And we don't do it that way in the OP. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm not making a value judgment. It's just a different cultural approach. Yeah. So I'd love if you could expand that for the people that might not be as familiar with the kind of PCA goings on and how that works.
Well, maybe I'll let Ben kind of address that. I think my two cents is that overtures are often reactionary in the PCA because we're addressing issues, because we're trying to speak to the churches around our denomination. But before I even pass that to Ben, you brought up a really good point about the URC brothers in their response to, right? Because the reason why grassroots Presbyterianism is such an emphasis in the PCA is because in the PCUS,
same thing.
It started becoming very top down. I was talking to some of our guys here in Dillon. We have a Tuesday morning men's Bible study at 6 a.m. And we were going through an old church history that we've been given away that we found in a closet somewhere. And one of the elders actually said, I didn't realize that in the history of our church that we had women deacons. And I had to explain that the whole reason we had women deacons is because we could not even entertain a vote to leave the PCUS until we met that top-down quota of having women officers. And so we literally had women officers for about 2 months because we had to have them because of the quota.
Yeah.
So that we could meet, so that we could set a legal vote to leave. Yeah. Wow. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was a mess. And so grassroots Presbyterianism is the emphasis because many churches went through that in their joining the PCA and leaving the PCUS. So anyway,
Ben, I'd love for you to expand on that, but I'm just think it's worth mentioning that it's a much different thing to submit an overture and appeal or to communicate to a higher body that they would do something. That's much different than just doing something contrary to the book. These are not equivalents in terms of grassroots, you know.
Correct.
Grassroots communication from bottom up saying we ought to do this, we think you should respond to this inquiry or this request, then make a decision, we think you ought to do this. That's different from we're just going to do what we want and call that grassroots.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's really the whole kind of thrust of that mentality was the thrust of why I wrote what I wrote on my Substack for sure.
Yeah.
But Ben on Polity Matters, he and his guys, they do a big overtures. They do a big overtures episode for GA. They might have to put it in two or three this time, but
we usually do two. It's probably going to be four this year though, based on the numbers. Yeah.
What's your thoughts on the overtures, Ben?
Well, I always wonder if overtures coming from certain places are asking permission for things or if they're seeking forgiveness for things.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be charitable. I think I always appreciate it when guys send overtures to change stuff because it means that they're trying to get a change the right way.
Right.
You know, if you want to operate differently, we need to change the book so that you can operate differently.
Yeah, we should have integrity.
Yeah, for sure. And so a lot of, you know, there's overtures this year coming up about, what'd you call it, Matt? Functional female officers, right?
Yeah.
That I disagree with, but I appreciate the effort and I appreciate the conversation. And I want those overtures to be really good in their respective light so that we have content to deal with and can say a strong no to the substance of the thing. The overtures thing, I've been ordained in the PCA for a little over 10 years. I've been paying attention for about twice that. And there's always been a lot of overtures. And it's just been kind of the characteristic of our denomination. Our overtures committee that meets for the day and a half or 2 days before our assembly actually convenes is sort of like our delegated assembly, right? That's where a lot of the meat and potatoes of the whole assembly happens. The rest of it is just hearing from the OPC and other denominations and listening to reports from our missions agencies and stuff. And, and then, you know, is it bad for me to say that just sort of rubber stamping a bunch of stuff after that, but so much of it happens in overtures. But I like it. I mean, I don't think bad to say about the way we do our overtures system. Do you guys call them bills or you call them overtures?
We call them overtures. We just don't have them very often. they're typically, you know, appeals that, hey, we need to, we found this loophole in the book, we need to fix it. It's stuff like that usually in the OPC, but we've got, yeah, we got some others coming up. We'll see how things go this summer.
I love how small your Book of Church Order is, by the way. I keep a copy over here.
You should see the original one. It's even smaller.
It's great.
It's not in a three-ring box.
Just fits in the palm of your hand.
Our general assembly.
So even if we change it, we have a rule that even if we change or amend it or do anything, it doesn't go into effect unless it's a year that ends in 0 or 5. And the reason for that is because we don't want to print these every year. So it's like, we're only printing them every 5 years at most. So
you can get a 3-ring binder and, you know,
change it every hour.
every year, you know, we approved. So the Presbyterian's officially approved 10. And so there'll be 10 overtures before the GA for its final ratification.
Yeah.
So I forgot how many we had. We had like 40 something last year. And 10 have officially made it through to the next stage before they're ratified. And so for your listeners that don't know, presbyteries start with local sessions, then they're sent to presbyteries, mm-hmm. and then they're sent to the General Assembly. And mm-hmm. then, of course, if a presbytery doesn't approve it, a session can send it anyways. That's a feature of the grassroots. Mm. But then they have to be approved by General Assembly and then by 2/3 of our presbyteries and then again by our General Assembly. So it's a long, at least a year process.
It's exhausting.
Ratified.
The wheels of Presbyterianism turn slowly, but that's a feature. That's a feature.
I was about to say it's a feature.
Mostly.
Presbyterianism slows things down because truth and justice matter. I think
that's right. Of course.
And so the slowness of amending our constitution is necessarily slow, and that's a good thing. It's exactly a feature. Right. It might be frustrating, but it is a feature nonetheless.
So I wanted to pose the question for everyone here, not only in the kind of theme of this episode, but now tease it out. You know, what is a Presbyterian, or what is Presbyterianism? And I think the tendency can be to reduce it to meetings and courts, or just to think about maybe even deconstructing it by etymology or the origin of the words. Presbyteros is a Greek word for elder, and in our form of government, that's a specific ordained office. But I think we need to go further and see Presbyterianism not just as a form of polity or a form of government or even just a name for a denomination or types of a denomination. But I think it's important that we recognize that ecclesiology, polity, even government is not arbitrary. I get the sense, you guys feel this, that a lot of times people think, well, you've got your doctrine and then, you know, you kind of pick and choose what you think the best way to run your church is. They don't have the idea that church government necessarily flows forth from the Bible. I'm not saying every point of the Book of Church Order, you know, is thus saith the Lord. It's not, but they're tertiary standards. But it's not just an arbitrary decision either, that it's not just something you can just pick and choose.
Yeah, so I mean, if we're thinking about biblical evidence of layered courts or gathered courts, you could easily go to Acts 15 in the Jerusalem Council, mm-hmm. you know, where the apostles are gathered to make a decision, and that decision is binding upon the Christian church. Of course, you have elders in every town, you know, Acts 14, Titus 1, 1 Timothy 5. And they have a real authority, mm-hmm. and there is real submission, but it doesn't stop at the congregational level. The churches, of course, are led by a plurality of elders. Mm-hmm. That authority is real, but there's a connectionalism.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Beyond that local level, right? And so, our congregations sit within presbyteries. Our presbyteries then, send to the General Assembly. And that is interesting about the PCA, because when you're at General Assembly, you introduce yourself as teaching elder or ruling elder, Matthew Adams. I'm a teaching elder, of course, but you identify your office, you give your name, and then you give the presbytery. And at the presbytery level, you give the church. And so, you know, you're there as a commissioner of a church, but you're there also representing your presbytery as well, which is an interesting dynamic. And so there's a connectionalism that's not just relational between our churches, but constitutional as well. And I think that's a really important an important layer of our connectionalism. It's not just that we're all PCA churches or all PCA presbyteries, but there's a constitution that also binds us together in our connectionalism.
Yeah, I mentioned that triad, connectionalism is that third component. It's so critical because it's what differentiates congregationalist elder-led churches from actual Presbyterian or Reformed churches. So you have a plurality of elders. You need to have more than one, put it that way. You can't have one guy at your church. If you're down to one elder or you have a minister and an elder passes away or moves or something like that, we have mechanism for augmenting the session. But under no circumstances is a Presbyterian church ever governed by one person. It can't be by definition. Number two, you have to have a parity of those elders. That means that one guy's vote doesn't count more than another, and no one has a veto, right? So there's an equality or a parity. It doesn't matter whether you're teaching elder, ruling elder. In our case, we'd say minister or elder. The minister doesn't have final say, so to speak. Now, you want to work together. Ideally, you all want to be on the same page. But in no circumstance does one guy set the tone and make all the decisions, and then everyone else has to just follow in course. And then you have to have a connectionalism where the churches are connected and accountable to one another. Because in certain cases, sometimes churches sessions err. And there needs to be checks and balances, and that goes up and down. So you have multi-layered courts and a whole system of appeals and accountability and the protection of the voice of the minority as well. So those three things together, plurality of elders, parity of elders, and connectionalism, connectedness, really forms the backbone of this. But it's important also to see that the idea of Presbyterianism is even wider. We might even say it's a helpful way to frame this is that Presbyterianism is a coherent system, that it's like a unit. And these would include things such as, you know, God's sovereignty or an emphasis on God's grace. You know, we think about the doctrines of grace and Calvinism. You can think about covenant theology. The doctrine of the church, the way we understand the sacraments is outflowing from that doctrine of the church, as well as the government. So it's all a unit, and these things go together. And it's really weird when we see all of these. Sometimes, I don't know if you guys have ever visited a church, but it's kind of odd when you see all this stuff, and they seem to be checking every box, and then you find out, well they're independent or something like that. It doesn't fit. It's because that independence is not just, well, we decided not to do that here. It's like the guy that cheers for the Bulls, the Bears, the Cubs, and then like the Red Wings. You know, it's like one thing doesn't fit. You know, why is that the case? I don't know.
That's a hockey team, Ben.
Yeah. Thanks. Appreciate that.
Yeah. No, you know, the whole idea of checks and balances or due process. That's a really fascinating feature of Presbyterianism. You know, of course, we have our standards and, you know, that doctrinal unity or that doctrinal connectionalism is preventing churches from becoming their own kind of theological islands. And we have that accountability that pastors and elders and sessions and presbyteries are accountable beyond themselves. But the idea of a formal, ordered procedure, I think, really protects the church in its discipline and in its governance in a way. And like you said, and I'm sure the OPC is like this. I'm not exactly sure. Maybe you can explain it. But the PCA, it is, you know, the accountability, the checks and balances is up and down, right? So session records are reviewed by presbytery records are reviewed by General Assembly. But then at the same time, all of our committees and agencies at the General Assembly level are then accountable to what we call committees of commissioners, where our GA commissioners review minutes and budgets and all those things.
Yep.
And so it is, it's, it works both ways. And that helps keep the unity and the connectionalism, you know, doctrinally and accountability wise, that helps keep us all in good order. Right.
Absolutely. So,
yeah. Is that kind of how the OPC works too, Camden?
Yeah. We call them an advisory committee, but we certainly do that. Like all of our denominational committees, you'll have to submit their records and minutes, and those get reviewed by commissioners to General Assembly, which is made up of people that were sent by presbyteries, which is made up of people representing the individual local churches. So it's a very similar mechanism. So I think we can answer this question. Let me be a little bit punchy with some of these prompts, but when people say Presbyterianism is basically congregationalism with some extra steps, these are the kinds of things they're missing. Right. It isn't merely individual autonomous local churches that happen to go to some meetings. Right. I mean, these are actually, you know, you're bound to submit to your brothers and sisters in the Lord.
Yeah. The vows we take as elders make it very clear, not only of the authority, right, that we have and the submission of members in a congregation, but also our submission to the brethren in the Lord who are going to sit on these layered courts. And so we're taking vows, you know, before God, yes, but we're taking vows to operate in this connectional Presbyterian world that has built-in protections in and of itself, of course, but that actually helps keep us accountable, helps keep us doctrinally faithful, who helps keep us in order through that due process. And even, one of the greatest things is as we're striving to sanctify the church as her leaders through things like discipline, these layered courts are helping us do that faithfully, according to the scriptures that's articulated in our Constitution as well.
That's a really good way to put it, Matt, because I think when people hear this idea of connectedness and mutual submission or accountability, you tend to think of it in a negative way. It's like there are these regional churches and a general assembly that are going to crimp my style, right? These people are preventing me from doing things I think I ought to do and would like to do. But that's a very negative way to put it, rather than saying, hey, there's a discipline here and an accountability that is good in the sense that you would discipline your children or you would talk to a brother if you saw them going astray or doing something that they ought not to do. You want people in your life that are going to speak to you and correct you and point you in the right direction and encourage you along those lines. So there's a very positive benefit that it isn't just that a hampering of your freedoms, but actually an enablement and an encouragement for more faithful practice, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Where is freedom found in the Christian life, right? Mm-hmm. It's in submission to God's law, right? Mm-hmm. Walk in the ways that he has commanded for us to walk in those paths of righteousness. I'm not saying that Presbyterianism is God's law, but I am saying that there is freedom for the local church when they abide by what has been set forth in the scriptures that are articulated in our Constitution. And so freedom in the work of the church and then the worship of the church is actually most enjoyed when we're walking together as a denomination of churches, as part of the church, the OPC or the PCA. Right.
Yeah.
Can I jump in there, Camden?
I was just going to ask. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, and maybe pushing back on Matt a little bit, our Book of Church Order in the PC, I don't know if the OPC says this. I would imagine it says something like this, that being Presbyterian is not essential to being a church, but it's necessary to the perfection right. of the order of the visible church. Mm-hmm. You know, old school Thomas Witherow style, Presbyterianism is the prescribed method of church government that we've been given. Mm-hmm. If we want to do it the way the apostolic church did it, we do it as Presbyterians. And I actually wonder sometimes if that's the trouble that guys in our denomination have, where you run into churches that are doing things outside of what's allowed because they don't recognize, hey, our form of government isn't just sort of the best thing we cobbled together. We've actually been handed this in the right. Bible, and we're trying to do what the Lord Jesus has given to us. Right. So it's not just our doctrine and our discipline and our order, I guess. It's also the order of all of it, right? That we've been given a government from King Jesus, and we have to put it into place. And to buck against that is not to buck against, you know, to do intinction, to go back to your article, or to have a functional female officer is not to just sort of disagree with your denomination. In disagreeing with your denomination that you vowed to go along with, you're actually disagreeing with the Lord Jesus and what he has brought to you and handed you to use in the governing of his church. I think Presbyterianism is God's law, for the record, Adams.
No,
I know you're with me, dude. You're right.
But, you know, one of the things I think about connectional Presbyterianism, when we think about, you know, how the Presbyterian and Reformed world has stood the test of time with our standards, you know, to articulate our doctrine, with our polity, to talk about our orderliness and our government, you know, it's so much easier to resist the cultural pressures of the day, because our government and our doctrine has stood through many different winds and waves of cultural pressures. We have come out of those pressures, come out of those waves, still affirming the same thing that we have affirmed. You know, it's gone through the martyrdom of England, and it now it's going through the postmodern age of America, right? And it's really easy for churches to become localistic, and not only regionally, but in our specific setting of time, to think that there has to be something innovative to reach this culture or to reach this area. And in fact, kind of what Presbyterianism has proved, both in polity and in doctrine, is that we don't have to do the innovative thing. We just simply be true to who we are, and what we believe the Bible has prescribed, right? And of course, localism, it does kind of rear its head more in the metro areas. I mean, Dillon, South Carolina is not a metro, but if y'all didn't know that already, it's not a metro. And so, you know, the pressures of our ministry here in Dillon are going to be quite different than the ones in New York City and Atlanta. But how good is it that this connectionalism where three elders from Dillon, South Carolina can sit in the same room as three elders from New York City and help us or help each other not give in to doctrinal drift, not give in to the localism, not give in to the culture of the time, and to encourage one another to keep the faith as it's been given. And I think that's a beautiful part of Presbyterianism, is that it takes guys from all different situations and puts them in the room, and we help one another stay faithful. There's no unaccountable leadership within Presbyterianism. There's no unchecked authority, but there's mechanisms to keep us doctrinally faithful, to keep us, to strive to keep us pure in our doctrine and faithful in our practice.
Yeah.
Right.
How could people get involved? Because I imagine some people might be listening. We have a lot of ministers and elders and people that are kind of in the know and active that listen, but quite a few others that might be wondering. They might even be members of Presbyterian churches, and they're wondering, how do I get involved? If they happen to be an officer, if they're a minister or an elder, there are mechanisms for going to presbytery and general assembly. It's different from denomination to denomination. But I'm wondering, both you, Matt, and Ben, how would you encourage your church members, for example, who say they want to be vibrant, active, faithful Presbyterians as, you know, people who don't presently hold special office? What are some ways they can be active and encouraging and true Presbyterians rather than just, you know, people that happen to go to this local church?
Mm-hmm. Ben, you want to take a stab at that first?
One thing our church does that I appreciate is that we let folks know when presbytery meetings and general assembly meetings are coming up, and we ask them to pray. Mm-hmm. And it can be hard to give specifics sometimes, depending on what we're dealing with. And certainly with GA, the scope is just so much that you can kind of give some bullet points. But often find that when people start praying, even just generically, for the courts of the church, their interest begins to peak.
Mm-hmm.
And after they've prayed a little while, then you can kind of say like, hey, these are the couple things we dealt with, you know, and they're somewhat interested. You might have to have a class, you know, on polity if you need to educate some people as to exactly how things work. Mm. GA is a little bit easier because, you know, everybody's writing about what's going on at GA. You know, you can hand them podcasts and you can send them the streaming link. I mean, there's just so much available. It's nauseating. But they can get involved sort of at whatever depth they want to from a distance. And that's really helpful. Mm. We also do... we'll do like a report on General Assembly. We probably should do one on Presbytery, but we'll come back and, you know, like on a Wednesday night or something when people are around, we'll say, hey, this is what happened at GA this year. This is what your pastors and your elders are happy about and what we're disappointed about. And this is what we think is going to happen over the next year. And really just talking about it, I guess, yeah. You know, praying about it, talking about it can be very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I think that, you know, when you're in Presbyteries like Ben and Oz, where geographically, you know, the longest I have to travel for a presbytery meeting is about 1 hour and 15 minutes. You know,
it's amazing.
Be jealous. You know, one of the things is, I mean, just encourage men to go. You know, what is so good about a book of church order that is extensive like ours is that, you know, presbyteries are looking at session meetings and they're looking for the delegates to that presbytery meeting to give a report. They're looking for the delegates to the General Assembly to report to their congregation. And so our practice here in Dillon is always write a pastoral letter to our congregation, a preview of what's upcoming at General Assembly, and then a review of what's happened at General Assembly as well. And that's been super helpful because all of a sudden, now that the PCA, our mega denomination, live streams General Assembly,
and people watching it,
people are watching it from the church. And
nerds,
are they betting on Polymarket as to how the votes go?
Well, you know, we might should at this point. You know, it, as public as our General Assembly is, I can't believe somebody's not doing some sort of
don't spoil Polity Matters plans for the next year, guys.
That's
don't,
right.
Don't get it out there.
PCAmarket.com.
Yeah.
Buy it now.
So, yeah, I mean, there's plenty of ways to get involved and to know, like Ben said, you know, whatever depth you really want to know. You know, the layman can read these overtures and talk to their pastors about them. And I would say pretty much every year after my pastoral letter goes out, I at least have 2 or 3 people come by my office and want to talk about General Assembly, which is great.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they are members of the Presbyterian Church in America. And so I love that. Just the unordained kind of churchgoer can know what's going on and be involved in that, of course, by just knowing and praying.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, for elders, they need to participate in the courts. They need to be on presbytery committees. They need to be attending General Assemblies, getting involved in the committees of the assembly and participate. You know, it's really easy to especially in a bigger denomination like the PCA, but it's really easy just to sit back, not be involved, and then complain when something doesn't exactly go the way you want it to go.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, it takes a good, faithful churchman to really get in there and roll his sleeves up and get to work, and really fight for confessional fidelity and faithfulness.
Yeah. Sometimes you get this sense, if you don't know how things actually work or how things are, people can get this sense that the people that are involved, they're part of some official class, or that it's even kind of a machine or a mechanism. And I don't necessarily mean that in a bad way, but there are insiders and outsiders. But what you don't always see is that it's just, we're all just church members, you know, and some are officers and have, you know, not only an official position, but some have elected positions here, there, and the other. But the General Assembly, for example, is not some autonomous unit. It's not something that exists in and of itself. It's made up of the people that comprise it and the bodies that comprise it, the people that are sent from the bodies. So sometimes it's helpful just to remember that. And the same thing goes for the local church, right? Sometimes you'll have a local, a member at your local church come up and say, hey, I think we, you know, who's going to, you know, whatever. They're wondering, they want to make some change and they're looking for some formal official suggestion, or they want some sort of top-down approval. Well, a lot of times it's just having a suggestion, seeing if people are okay with that. Maybe if it requires some sort of sessional decision or oversight, go and ask them. But it's not like the session is sitting around usually, you know, saying, no, we tell the orders around here and we're the only that come up with ideas. If you have a suggestion or you want to take some action, you know, consult with the session, but get busy, you know, roll up your sleeves, like you said, Matt, and start, you know, doing something about it. Not autonomously, not in contradiction, you know, to the leadership of the church, but I'm saying a lot of times things don't happen is because no one's doing anything.
Right. Yeah. You know, our church is made up of committees. Our ruling elders chair these committees, and mm-hmm. And, you know, when people come to me with ideas about the church and her ministries, I tell them which committee meeting to attend. And let it start there. And you know, it's that idea of graded, you know, I don't want to say courts because a committee is not a court, but it's that, that
some delegated hierarchy. Responsibilities just to share the load.
And so go get on that committee, you know, fine tune your idea with some fellow members. And then, you know, if you need session approval, the chairman of that committee will bring it and we'll discuss it and maybe refine it some more, and you're off. You know, you're setting sail in this new idea that you've had. And the benefit of that is, you know, what you might have thought was a good idea was actually not a good idea, or what you thought was a good idea has actually become a better idea. And that's always beneficial to the ministry of the church as well.
Yeah.
To make sure that that we are doing the best thing that we can do as a people of God, to make sure that we're seeing family strengthened, covenant children making professions of faith, sinner saved, discipleship happening, you know, all those things are important. And the way in which this connectionalism works within the local church and within the denomination helps us put our best foot forward together.
That's good. Ben, I want to ask you before we get moving, what you guys have up your sleeve at Polity Matters. You mentioned some of the maybe preview episodes you might do to cover some of the overtures, but what have you been working through? You've been working through the BCO. I'm curious about your thoughts. And then I really want to know, what's the one, like, do you have some sort of a lightning rod episode that either one of two things, give me the one episode that blew everything up or tell me the topic that would blow everything up if you were to do it.
Polity Matters has been going for about 2.5 years.
Sure.
We are the podcast that nobody expected would ever work. Who wants to,
you even have merch
stuff,
though,
but we do, we have swag for GA. You can, if you find us online, politymatters.org, you can probably navigate to some of the merch you can actually purchase and have shipped to your house.
Awesome.
Yeah, so we started out going through the Book of Church Order, kind of chapter by chapter. When we got into the section on discipline in the middle, we started having guests on. So like a lot of the big wigs in the discipline world of the PCA.
Are they all people that have been disciplined by that section? Is that
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, personal experience required. We had a lot of SJC judges join us. Fred Greco, yeah. Guy Waters, a lot of those guys mm-hmm. helped us work through that stuff. And now we're working through the Directory for Worship, which we joke a lot is we're working through a non-constitutional the part of our directory. Portion.
Not for long.
It's been the most devotional part for me. We've appreciated it a lot, and mm-hmm. It's been really encouraging. I mean, in recent history, last week, in fact, as this airs, we dropped an episode with the author of one of the deaconess overtures for this mm-hmm. coming General Assembly, and that was we got some good feedback just on our willingness to have a conversation
mm-hmm. That's good.
About that from both sides. So yeah, that's probably the hottest topic we've addressed. We kind of like to ride in the middle and not reveal too much about our personal opinions because it's polity.
Stick
you know,
to
we
the book.
Talk about what, yeah. yeah, we just want to kind of stick to it. So,
y'all also worked through Witherow, right?
We did do about 8 weeks on Witherow and had Johnny Gibson on to talk about him a little bit too. So we worked through all of his apostolic church, which is it, and then, yeah, for PCA folks, we do a big, deep dive into the overtures every year. Yeah. Probably will be 3 episodes this year, but we'll drop that like late May. We'll wait for everything to be in before we air it. But, I know folks turn that on while they're driving a GA because it's just, you know, an easy way to listen through. And
yeah,
we try not to give too much of our opinions. We just try to present, you know, pros and cons and, you know, all that kind of stuff to give people a good sense of what's coming, not so much to direct them in their voting.
No, that's good. That's good. And Matt, tell us what you've got lined up at Larger for Life, because you guys are coming near to the end of the Larger Catechism.
Yeah, so
you can turn into pumpkins.
I don't know what we're going to do. You know, it's going to be like the Friends farewell episode, you know. Yeah, so we've been going.
Are you and
for,
Derek
going
to finally get back together? Is that how this
me and Derek are finally going to get back together. That's the big conclusion. It's interesting because Derek and I are talking about a totally different project that we might start after Larger for Life ends. But yeah, so we're right in the middle of the Larger Catechism explaining what the ordinary means of grace are. And so we're currently finishing up preaching, and then we'll move to sacraments, and then we'll move to prayer, which of course contains the commentary, the exposition of what the Lord's Prayer is and what we're praying for. And then we'll be done. And so I guess we will be finishing up this year. And, you know, there's already a Shorter Catechism podcast that one of my co-hosts, Steven Spindenweber, did with one of his friends down in Florida. Mm-hmm. So we don't have another catechism in the Westminster Standards to work through.
You can flip over to our cousins and go with the three forms, I suppose.
But, yeah, we have discussed it actually working through the Heidelberg. Yeah. That just feels like we're wading into people's territory a little bit, you know? It's been a good run. We have a lot of fun, on that podcast, but maybe some of the Larger for Life guys will be jumping on a new project afterwards.
We'll have to get you more guests over to come on and visit us at Christ the Center. We'll receive you and welcome you. But maybe this is one of those things. It's like, you know, with TV, sometimes when the TV series ends, they do a feature film. So I'm looking for the Larger for Life movie. Eventually.
Yeah, well,
it's like Arrested Development.
Watch it.
You know, Larger for Life. Could be good.
Yeah, it would be entertaining and definitely listed as a comedy. That's for sure.
So I love it. So check it out. We've got 2 podcasts, Polity Matters, Larger for Life, always excellent listens. I encourage you to take a look at those. It's been fun talking with you both. And of course, read Matt's article, Grassroots Presbyterianism Does Not Equal Congregationalism. It's got the nice math symbol in the title there. Very good. Very, very good use of Unicode to get that in there.
It took me a Google search to figure out how to do it. So, but if I wrote out does not equal, it just doesn't grab like I wanted it to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's good. You're just one step from emoji. I'm always waiting for that. If you start preaching, writing sermon manuscripts with emoji, we're going to have a discussion.
But, you're welcome to come to Dylan from Chicago land and
have a good lecture. Well, it's been great. Presbyterianism, not optional, important. But as mentioned, it's not, part of the essay of the church, so to speak, but it's certainly part of the Bene essay. It's part of the well-being of the church not an optional arbitrary decision, but it's our little bit of encouragement also with the things going on these days and controversies in the church and goings on in church courts. It's always good to be reminded of plurality of elders, parity of elders, and mutual submission and accountability through connectedness. It's very good. I'll put the links in the episode description for people to follow up with the podcast links and the article links and the various churches. Thank you so much, Ben and Matt. I want to thank everybody for watching us here. I hope you join us again next time on Christ the Center.